Part 1. Failure is not an option. Chapter 1. West Coast of England. April 13, 1494. The sound of clashing weapons was carried away on the wild, ripping wind. All other sound lost any relevance as the angry, deafening 30-foot waves crashed white on the boulders hundreds of feet below. If one were to believe in the existence of Titans, then the mighty Poseidon surely had awakened from the watery depths, showing his might as a force that no human dare reckon. Morgan Pembridge, 7th Duchess of Seabridge, stood frozen on the jagged cliffs of her ancestral home, with her gaze fixed on her husband and uncle, as they danced the deadly dance so close to the razor's edge. Swords arched and clashed, cooling the very lightning from the sky, just as if Thor's hammer brought the crashing thunder. The right to her freedom hung in the balance with the outcome of this battle. It would seal her fate and the fate of every successive generation to follow. Her husband and uncle were engaged in a fight that would be to the death, and the gods of old knew they would be appeased here this day, demanding nothing less than a blood sacrifice. Morgan didn't see the man creeping behind her, intent on taking her life. Cullen did, and the young knight dove toward her, placing himself between a woman he loved and her assassin. After the first strike, he tumbled to the ground, pushed her aside, and deflected the second blow while using his body as a shield to protect her from the strike designed to end her life. Rolling just as the man was raising his sword to strike a third time, Morgan saw Cullen's sword still clutched in his hand, and she placed her hands around his hand to help him thrust upward, piercing the assassin's heart. The man was dead before he hit the ground. Nick McKinnon, 7th Duke of Seabridge, pushed Lord Brentwood ever closer to the rocks. Brentwood was faltering and was no match for Nick's superior skill and driving need to end this threat to his wife and three small children. Nick smelled Brentwood's fear and sensed victory. He instinctively knew the end was near.
"You're mine, Brentwood, and I shall gladly kill you, and kill you slowly for the 7 years of hell you put my woman through. You shall never again threaten me and mine. I won't give you the satisfaction."
Knowing Nick would make good on his threat, Brentwood jumped from the cliff, falling hundreds of feet below to his death, where the mighty Poseidon received his offering, sucking down the gift into the watery depths of the grey, foamy sea. Nick sighed. It was over. The nightmare was finally over. Morgan was free from the clutches of the madman who, for years, had been set on stealing Morgan's birthright through treachery and deceit. Turning away from the edge, Nick watched Regan, who was a healer and a friend, kneel on the ground next to his beloved younger brother. Morgan was clutching Cullen's hand, holding it to the side of her face. Connor Holden, his friend and blood brother, along with two other men-at-arms, stood back, ready to defend them in the event they hadn't killed all Brentwood's men in the bloody battle for the right to claim Seabridge and the riches it represented. The scene took a moment to register in Nick's mind. Finally, he understood Regan was frantically working to save Cullen. Nick ran to the small group as he heard his wife anxiously pleading for Regan's help. Nick knew his brother's life was slipping away.
"Regan, you are a healer. You must save him. Please, you must," Morgan sobbed.
She had grown to love her brother-in-law. He was a good and honorable young man, as well as a good friend. Giving her support and encouragement, he had helped her through the long, terrible months when Nick had been imprisoned. Cullen had never let her give up hope that Nick would come home alive. Nevertheless, more important than her selfish feelings, Nick loved him, and he was family. He couldn't die so young.
"Please, please,"
Morgan begged again.
I am doing the best I can,
Regan said, never looking up from her effort to stem the blood flow, pressing his wounds with long strips from her underskirt that she had ripped off to use as packing. The young knight was bleeding out from the internal damage he had sustained. Now it was only a matter of time before he, too, became a casualty of this senseless battle that had been driven by Lord Brentwood's insanity and greed.
How bad is it, Ree?
Nick was on his knees beside his brother. He knew Cullen's injuries were grave. Far too long a soldier, Nick didn't need her to tell him what he recognized to be a fatal wound. He had lost many good men. Now it looked as if fate was going to take Cullen as well.
His condition isn't good, Nick,
Regan said, shaking her head.
He's losing blood very fast.
Cullen was dying, and for all Regan's skill, she could never hope to save him here. Morgan was crying, sorrow and guilt stabbing her, as she looked over Cullen's body at her husband.
Oh God, Nick, this is my fault,
Morgan sobbed.
If I had gone to York instead of disobeying you, he would be all right. He wouldn't have taken the blade for me. This is entirely my fault.
Don't, Morgan. Beg you. Not your fault.
Cullen pleaded with great effort as blood streamed from the edge of his mouth. Morgan took the hem of her dress and gently wiped the blood away, placing tender fingers across his lips.
Shh, now. Don't try to speak. Save your strength. Regan will save you. I know she can.
Morgan looked into Regan's eyes.
You can. I feel it. You have a way. I pray you, from whatever direction the help may come, just do it before it's too late.
Regan looked at Nick, Connor, and then Morgan.
Yes, there may be a way.
Regan's voice was steady. Still, Connor saw the doubt reflected in the Irish woman's eyes as she looked back at him. He had come to know her, and her expression told him she was unsure. Connor found her trepidation unsettling. In all the time he had watched her, fought with her, and dealt with her, he had never seen her waver. Until this moment. Regan looked to Connor again, and she had no idea why, but in some way his towering presence reassured her.
Nick, my idea is beyond risky in Cullen's current condition, but it's the only way to save him.
Then do it,
Nick said.
You're the only one who can save him.
She looked at Connor a third time. Connor believed she had just looked to him for reassurance. He gave her a nod and a tight-lipped smile of resolve. If she needed his strength and his belief in her abilities in this time of crisis, then by God, he would give it to her, regardless of their past differences. He saw the moment she made up her mind as all misgiving fled, leaving only the firebrand he recognized and had grown to admire. Regan turned to Morgan.
Is there a hallowed place anywhere close? Think, Morgan, and do so quickly. Men bleed to death at the same rate, no matter the century.
She was startled with her last comment. She was so adept at keeping her secret that she was surprised it had slipped out, even under pressure. Morgan did not have to think except for a split second.
My mother worshipped the old gods. My father had a shrine built for her. I do not know if it still exists,
she said, as she sprang to her feet. Regan pushed all her medicines back into her bag and pulled the black leather strap over her shoulder.
Then take me to it. It isn't the altar so much as the place itself. Connor, you and Nick carry Cullen. Try to be as careful as possible. We must hurry. We're running out of time.
Morgan led the way. The shrine was just over a small rise, not far from their present location, and Regan recognized the place instantly as it sent her to her knees.
Ah!
Regan cried as she sensed a power more potent than anything she had ever felt before. The ancient power flowed through her like a raging river bent on consuming anything in its path. This was an intersection where space and time forcefully collided, thinning the veil, separating the dimensions of the past, present, and future.
"What is this place?"
Connor shivered, helping her to her feet as he felt the hair stand on the back of his arms and the pulsating sensation racing along Reagan's skin.
"It's an ancient place of energy. Those who have the ability to call and harness its power can use it."
"Use it for what?"
Connor asked as he raised one dark brow in question.
"It depends on the gifts,"
Reagan answered, keeping her attention on Cullen and placing pressure on his wounds. Connor grabbed her wrist, stopping her movements, and pulled her attention to him. She was not a small woman, but it was no matter to Connor. He was an extraordinarily tall man, and any woman felt small to him. Reagan was no maiden at 28. Neither was he so young at 30. But her wisdom and knowledge were as attractive to him as nectar to bees. Her clear skin was fresh and translucent in the early afternoon light, and her hair was like spun fire as the rays caught its shine. He shook his head in wonder as to why, in all this madness, he was just beginning to see how truly beautiful she was.
"And your gifts would be?"
Connor demanded, looking into her warm cinnamon-brown eyes.
"Healing," Reagan said, then looked away.
Connor knew she wasn't telling him everything.
"And what else, Reagan? Do not withhold from me. I want the truth."
He held her chin, forcing her to gaze into his eyes.
"What else, Ree? I will have the whole of it from you."
"Time travel."
She felt the barely discernible movement of his fingers slightly tightening on her chin.
"My gifts are healing and time travel. Put them together, and I have training in modern medicine, Connor. Really, really modern medicine. As in 20th century modern medicine."
"You are from the future?"
Connor asked, not showing his surprise.
"No, I was born in 1466. I have been to the future on countless occasions to increase my learning. I am what one in the 20th century would call a doctor of internal medicine."
Connor was finally getting the answers he had been seeking for months, and he did not like the answers at all. The thought of her powers made him uncomfortable, and he stepped back from her. Reagan felt the sting of his withdrawal, but she also felt the power of the shrine calling to her. She knew time was growing critical. Turning away from Connor and back to Cullen, she placed her right hand on his face. She had to know.
"Cullen, I must be sure you agree to this. If I take you forward, you will never be able to return. Once you cross over, you will be gone to them, and they will instantly be dead hundreds of years to you."
"I am dead to them either way. Am I wrong?"
Cullen's voice was now barely above a whisper. Reagan studied Cullen's skin. He was turning grey and taking on the mask of death. He would be dead in minutes.
"I can't save you here. I'm sorry,"
Reagan answered him honestly. He deserved as much.
"Cullen, oh, Cullen, I am so sorry."
Morgan softly cried over him.
"You are my friend, and I love you. You know that, do you not?"
Cullen nodded, taking her hand.
"I will always love you, and not just as a friend. It has been my greatest joy to serve you."
It was the confession of a dying man. Cullen looked at his brother. He knew he would do it all again for Morgan's sake, and for Nick's. Only their happiness mattered, and he hoped fate would reward his selflessness. Morgan was Nick's one true love, and Cullen loved his brother as much as he loved Morgan.
"Nick, take care of our lady. I have always thought you were a lucky man."
Morgan leaned down and kissed Cullen softly on the forehead as Nick took Cullen's hand. Death was closing in rapidly.
Goodbye, brother. Remember us. Regan said to me one time, none of us were truly dead until the last person with a memory of us is also gone.
Regan pulled Connor to the side while Cullen, Nick and Morgan were saying their final goodbyes.
All right, Connor, here's the deal. I know this is a shock, but if we are to save him, this is what I will need waiting for me.
Quickly, she wrote out what she would need, explaining what each item represented.
It's instantaneous for us. You have 500 years to get it right. Keeping in mind, there's a lot of time for things to go wrong as well. If one generation forgets, he will be lost. I could be lost as well, if this place isn't preserved.
Connor took her hands in his, needing contact with her.
I shall see to it you have what you need, Regan. When will you return?
He asked. Their time was drawing short. Regan looked into Connor's eyes and felt her chest tighten. He could make her angrier than anyone on the face of the earth, but she knew, even with the differences they had shared, she would miss him. She slipped her hands from his, turning away.
I won't be coming back, Connor.
Connor grabbed her shoulders and turned her to face him. Then he took her chin in his hand, forcing her to look at him.
Nay, Regan, I will not accept this. You must return for Nick and Morgan's sake.
They will need the closure, he demanded softly.
It doesn't work that way, English. God, how I wish time travel did work that way. But it doesn't.
There were only so many times she could cross.
6 years earlier, she had made the crossover and felt her powers drain considerably on the return trip back. This was to be the last, as her power was weakening to the point of being nearly spent. Without an adequate amount of power, she couldn't risk trying to come back. She could get lost in between. Such was the way of the gift. Regan felt time slipping away. The proverbial train was leaving the station, and as it was, she knew she would have to run to catch it.
Then I will go with you, so I can bring word back to them.
Connor was resolved to follow her. Nick and Morgan would need the news of the outcome of Cullen's situation.
That can't happen. A man without the gift can only cross over once, and once they do, they can never return. Otherwise, I would send Cullen back once he heals and is out of danger.
Regan placed her palm on the side of his face. Her tender gesture surprised Connor.
I'm sorry, English, but this is a voyage where none can follow, and none will ever return.
A silky tear slipped down her cheek as she closed her eyes against the pain of leaving. Connor did not understand the sudden anger that overpowered him. She was leaving, and it was not acceptable to him.
You owe me for helping you get Nick to go to Morgan last night. He did go to her, and they have begun to mend the rift between them. You gave me your word that I could name my price. Well, this is my price, Regan O'Reilly. You will come back, and when you return, you will spend 1 year and a day with me at Featherstone.
She looked at him with surprise.
Oh, and is that all you want?
Regan didn't have any time to wait for his answer. With the final moments on them, she was frantic. Her heart hurt, her chest was exploding, and there was no time to figure out exactly why. Fate had not been kind. She had no time to prepare mentally for the pain that she knew would follow this separation by time and space. She was not being given the chance to say a proper goodbye to the people she had grown to love and think of as family. Neither would she have any closure, because the likelihood of her ever returning did not exist.
Nay, that's not all I want.
Connor grabbed her and crushed her to him, kissing her with everything in him. He poured into that single kiss all the intense emotions he could not convey with words. He had no idea those emotions even existed until she had said she would never return. He pulled back from her lips, reluctant to let her go, but did not release her completely.
Time is short. Now go, save him. Do not make this parting be for naught, and know I await your return. 1 year and a day, Regan. That is my price.
She stepped away from him.
Then it looks like you have 500 years to find the way back for me.
That's if I choose to come back, she said, brushing a lock of shoulder-length auburn hair away from her face.
Oh, you'll come back, Regan. Remember, m'lady, we have unfinished business.
She stepped away.
Goodbye, English.
Suddenly, a shimmery cloud, like a veil, appeared, and she and Cullen were gone.
Connor stood looking out over the rugged cliffs of Seabridge as the unrelenting wind whipped his dark, unbound hair. The mighty waves crashed against the jagged boulders below, while the lingering power of the ancient place swept over and through him. Nothing had changed, yet everything was no longer the same. His piercing blue eyes focused on some far-off, unknown point, and those who knew him would have recognized the stance. He stood with his fists balled on narrow hips, with his claymore, still bloody from the mortal battle he had fought and won not a half-hour past, by his side. The price of victory had come at an enormously high cost. It was a cost none could have fathomed at the onset of this journey. Connor was now engaged in a new battle. He felt as if his heart had been pulled whole from his chest and thrown into the crashing sea.
Regan.
He softly spoke her name with a longing born of regret. She had become woven into the fabric of his life. Those delicate threads of her healing touch, her laughter, her caring tenderly for those entrusted to her care, all had wound tightly around his heart. He hadn't realized until he had kissed her how important she had become to him. That one kiss, before she stepped through the veil of time, had forced him to see what a fool he had been, and what she could have been to him. Only he had seen it too late, and the thought of all the time they had wasted in a fruitless battle of wills, which in the end had accomplished nothing, set him reeling. He knew once his lips had met hers, a kiss would never have been enough between them. She had tasted like honey, sweet and satisfying, and had set him on fire in a way he had never felt before, leaving him longing for more.
So just like that, she is gone,
Connor said to the wind. It was hard to believe, but he had seen it with his own eyes.
Regan had called the power to her, punching a hole through the veil where time and space collided, and like a slingshot, it catapulted her and Cullen far into the future, to the year 1994. In doing so, she was forever beyond his reach, and he was dead to her the moment she emerged on the other side. How he could ever accept this, he didn't know. His heart began beating wildly in his chest as he thought of what she had asked of him. What if he failed her?
Nay, failure is not an option,
he said, realizing the enormity of the situation.
I have never failed, and I'm not about to start now,
he vowed as he looked down at the paper she had shoved into his hands. She had faith in him and entrusted him with her very life. He felt the weight of that life as if he held it in the palms of his hands instead of a scrap of paper. If he could not hold the woman, then he would hold her memory, devoting the whole of his life to fulfilling what she needed from him. So he vowed that he would give her all she had asked as long as he lived. She was now his call to arms, and he would never let her down so long as he drew breath, praying someday fate would bring her home again.